We're in chapter 21. We came as far as, and I don't know if I should read it and get off to a bad start, but verse 19 said it is better to dwell in the wilderness than in the house with a contentious and angry woman, which none of them live in this part of the country, but they have this problem out west. We are at verse 20. There is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise. There is treasure and oil in the sense that God has blessed them, the reason there is treasure and oil is because of their relationship with the Lord. So yes, there's something to be gained there. But a foolish man spendeth it up, just never has anything. He that followeth after righteousness and mercy finds something. So the person who seeks righteousness and mercy findeth life, righteousness, and honor. So he finds more than he was looking for. A wise man scaleth the city of the mighty and casteth down the strength of the confidence thereof. So wisdom, more important in the battle, strategy more important than just might. Important verse. Whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from trouble. Everybody here can say amen to that. If you can keep your mouth and your tongue, you can just avoid a lot of agita. That's a Latin translation. Proud and haughty scorner is his name. Who wants to hang around him? Who dealeth in proud wrath. He thinks he knows better than everyone else. The proud and haughty scorner, the critical spirit. The desire of the slothful man, it's the lazy man, the desire of the slothful man kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. So he sits around saying, man, I wish I had this, I wish I had that, I wish I had this, I would have this. And it's eating him up, but he doesn't lift his hand to do anything about it. He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous, those who are yielded to the Lord, to his word, giveth and spareth not. They have to give. And he's just thinking about what he wants, but never does anything about it. He's lazy. The sacrifice of the wicked is abomination. How much more when he bringeth it with a wicked mind? So, the sacrifice of the wicked. Someone walking into Solomon's temple with a lamb, the turtle dove, with an ox, making a sacrifice to the Lord while he embraces sin in his life, thinking that he can bribe God, or that God can be bought off, that God is a harlot, and that God will bless for a price. And God's saying, no, someone who comes and just plays church and all the while is maintaining rebellion and sin in their heart, it's an abomination. A false witness shall perish, but the man that heareth speaketh constantly or consistently. So a false witness, a liar, is inconsistent, but the man that heareth, and the idea of hearing in the book of Proverbs, hearing wisdom, speaks constantly. You can trust what he has to say. A wicked man hardeneth his face. You've seen somebody just mean-spirited and just it's written on their face. You look at them and just make a left. Man, did you see that look? Just a wicked man hardeneth his face, but as for the upright, he directeth or discerns his way. He thinks about where he's going, whereas the wicked man just, he hardens his face, he sets his direction, and he's going to go on and live like that no matter what anybody thinks or what the word of God says. There is no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. You are not going to win. If you're wrestling with God, trying to outsmart God, you can take this to the bank, you will not win. You aren't God, He is. And I'll tell you how I know. Because I've wrestled with them enough and lost enough to know that if you wrestle with God, you're not going to win. Ask Balaam. There is no counsel. There's nothing that will stand against the Lord. We hear Job in the last few chapters as God speaks to him saying, Job, where were you when I did these things? Where were you when I did this? There's no counsel against him. The horse is prepared against the day of battle, but safety or victory is of the Lord. Now, and by the way, that demands tremendous faith. That's true, and Solomon knew that was true. No doubt David had told his son Solomon about many incredible victories he had when the odds were against him, from Goliath onward. But it takes a huge measure of faith to walk out into a situation where you know, yeah, it would be nice to have a tank right now, but God's directed me, and victory really comes from the Lord and not from just military prowess or ability. So, true, it takes tremendous faith. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. So a good reputation, rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver or gold. Now, you have a good reputation. People trust you. They like you because of the way you conduct yourself. You're a person of integrity and character. You're open. You walk in the light. There's no guile, no deceit. You got a good reputation. People are going to show favor then, and that loving favor, hey, that's rather to be desired than silver and gold. People will be there. God will use that. Doors will open. So a good name, good reputation, rather to be chosen than riches, rather than silver and gold. The rich and the poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. The rich and the poor meet together before the Lord in eternity. The ground is level there at the throne of God. So the rich and the poor, when they stand before Him, wealth cannot buy eternity. The rich and the poor, they meet together. And just with all of the exhortations Solomon is giving, and he was the wealthiest man alive, just great to keep in mind that, you know, one man, it says in Deuteronomy, is given the ability to get wealth. Another man isn't. But in the end, that's not how men or women are measured, because they'll all stand before the Lord. He's the maker of them all. A prudent man foreseeth evil, and he hides himself. He has foresight, sees trouble coming, he avoids it. But the simple pass on and are punished to get themselves in a mess. By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. In contrast, thorns and snares are in the way of the froward, the perverse, the proud. So humility and fear of the Lord, through that there's riches and honor of life. Humility, the right estimation of self, fear of the Lord, to walk in His ways, to keep His ways, riches, honor, and life, but thorns and snares, difficulties in the way of the proud. He that doth keep his soul shall be far from them. Someone who's wise will not fall into the chastisement that the proud find themselves in. Verse 6, probably the most well-known verse in Proverbs for many. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. To many, this has been kind of a promise that you teach your kid the Bible when he's young, send him to Christian school and Christian camp, and then when he gets to be 17 or 18 and starts to sow his wild oats, and they all do that, you know, ultimately, because you taught him the Bible when he was little, after he's done living wildly, he will return to the Lord. Now, I hope that's true if it happens and you have a prodigal, but that's not really what the verse says. And by the way, that's not much of a promise. Labor for the well-being of your children, teach them, instruct them, and then they can go live like lunatics And in the final analysis, they'll come back. Well, the problem with that is we've seen many go out and they don't come back. We've seen some end up dead. It's lethal out there now with AIDS, with crack cocaine. The world is a different world. That's not really what it says. It says train up a child in the way he should go. You may have a gloss in your translation that says according to his, small h, the child's way, and when he is old, he won't depart from it. Now, there is a controversy whether it is train up a child according to his, capital H, the Lord's way, or train up a child according to his, small h, the child's idiosyncrasies. And obviously, both of them are true. The whole onus falls upon the parent. Train up. A child needs to be trained. It says in chapter 29, you don't have to turn there, it says, the rod and reproof, that's correction and instruction, give wisdom. But a child left to himself bringeth his mother shame. That we can't leave them to themselves, that they need to be trained. And it is the parent's responsibility to train the child. Sadly, we live in a culture where many parents are being trained by the children. They go out and they start to carry on and indulge in the world, and the parents, instead of taking a stand, figure, hey, you know what, I guess I got to be a little cool, I got to be a little hip, I want to be buddies with my kid, and the parents start to learn the names of the places they're going and the bands they listen to and this and that, and the parents are getting trained by the children. That's not what it says. It says train up. In fact, that word train up is used four other times in the Old Testament. It's used twice in Deuteronomy 20, verse 5. It's used once in 1 Kings chapter 7, verse 63. And it's used in 2 Chronicles 7, 5. All of those other places, it's translated dedicate. It's talking about the dedication of the temple or the dedication of someone's home. Two places talking about dedicating Solomon's temple. So training insinuates something. If you go to the Marines, you're trained. You go in the military, you're trained for something. You go to tech school, you're trained for something. Training in and of itself speaks of a goal, seems of some of a destination, as it were. And this word, train, is most often translated dedicated in the Old Testament. And when something's dedicated, it's dedicated to a purpose. And certainly Solomon's Temple, dedicated to the Lord. In the Arabic form, it's interesting, it was used of a Bedouin, a midwife, who would work with a woman that just gave birth in the desert. And that midwife would take some ripe dates and chew them up, masticate them, and then put her finger in that and put it in the baby's mouth to start the baby sucking. And then hand the baby to the mother to nurse. And the idea is the mouth of the child, you know, the initial thing in the child's life. And that word child means from birth to hair on the chin. So it's a broad term. But the idea is you want to develop a taste in a direction. You want to dedicate their life towards something. You want to aim them at a particular thing from the time that they're born. Because if all we do with our kids is what the world does, oh, you need a good job, you need a good education, you want to have a nice car, you want to marry a smart guy, you want to live in a big house, you want to have a house on the shore and a house up the mountain, if that's all we do, we haven't done anything. If all, again, you leave your kids as something that a lawyer settles when you die, you haven't left them anything at all. You're going to give an account for that kid. That kid's on loan from the Lord. So what this tells us here is that we should train them. And that training needs to be according to, certainly, his way. But it needs to be according to the child's way. Also, it's a given that you're going to train them in the ways of the Lord. But train the child according to his way. God has given that child idiosyncrasies. You need to know your child. And one of the things that people do wrong, again, my grandmother, who's with the Lord now, so she can't get mad, she's in heaven. But when my mom had a twin brother, and then 14 months later, I believe, my aunt was born, and there were three of them, and my grandmother would just beat all of them. She had what was called the cupfleffel, Kupfer's head, Lefel's spoon. It was a great big wooden head spoon. And when you were bad, you got cracked on the head with the Kupfleffel. But what she would do is if any of the three kids did any wrong, she didn't want to know who did it. She would beat them all. Then my mom said, I remember running around the dining room table, all three of us screaming, and grandma's chasing us with the head spoon, you know. And then they would fight when they got in the room after they got beat, because they got beat because one of them did something. But that's ungodly. That's not the way you're supposed to, you know. Dads do that. This is the rule, and if you don't like the rule, you can shape up or you can ship out, you know. And that kid's thinking, I'm shipping out, you know. Because they're all different. They have all different personalities. It's wrong to take one kid because, you know, he's inclined towards science. He's inclined towards microscope. You know, just God makes them. And the dad's a football fan. He said, you're going to play football whether you like it or not. You're going to go out there on that field. The kid, you know, no, that kid has a way. That kid has a bent, and it's the verb form of that in the Psalms is to bend. That kid's got a bent, a God-given bent. The rule book is the same for a kid that's bent this way or a kid that's bent that way, and of course that's the scripture. But what it says to you is they're all different in their temperament. They're different in their gifts, that you are to honor the fact that the warp and the woof of their nature, and it tells us that in Psalm 139, is woven in there when they're still in the womb. And they're going to be different. And you have to cooperate with those idiosyncrasies that God has given that makes them what they are. They're different from every other human on the planet. You know, you hear somebody say, hey, when they made that guy, they threw away the mold. Well, they threw away the mold when they made every single individual in this room. But none of us are the same. And God's given us different gifts and different tendencies and different strengths, different desires. So you raise a child, you dedicate their life to the Lord. You instruct them. You develop a taste for the things of God. And when that child then, who is raised that way, and his own characteristics are taken into consideration, when that child is old, when there's hair on the chin, he's not going to depart from those things. And the promise that we see here, and the promise we want to take note of, is this is telling us, and of course it's not 100% rule, because we've seen kids raised great that still become prodigals, but it's saying to us, if you do this and you do it the right way, then what your hope is that kid is never going to go AWOL. They're going to go on and walk with the Lord. Now, of course, there are prodigals. And if you're here this evening and you have a prodigal, look, I've seen parents so condemned. If I'd have done this, if I'd have done that, if we'd have only done this, if we'd have done that, then maybe our kid would, you know, Jesus gives us the story of the prodigal son, which is really the story of the older brother. It's against the Pharisees, but the story of the prodigal son. And in the story that Jesus gives us, God is the father. So we need to remember that the best parent, God in heaven, has prodigals. But even then, it says, when that prodigal, he said, when he came to his senses, he remembered his father's house. And my father is of such a nature that even his servants live better than people in the world. And of course, his heart was turned and he returned. But for you and I, train up a child according to his way, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. The rich ruleth over the poor. By the way, we took a whole Sunday morning on that verse, if you want more on that. The rich ruleth over the poor, and, you know, takes money to make money, or just, there are stratas in society. Sometimes it's through corruption, sometimes it's through, but the rich rules over the poor. And the borrower is servant to the lender. Anybody here with a credit card understands that. He that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity. Someone who's out causing trouble, they're going to end up with trouble. And the rod of his anger shall fail. He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed. The reason, for he giveth of his bread to the poor. Somebody who is generous, they have a bountiful eye. They're not a tight wad. They're always willing to give, to encourage, to help someone. It says that he's going to be blessed. He gives of his own resources to the poor. Verse 10, great verse. Cast out the scorner. I like that verse. Cast out the scorner, and contention shall go out. Yea, strife and reproach shall cease. The scorner is the critical spirit. You have someone that is always critical. Now look, it is easy to become scornful. If something happens in the church, and it will if it hasn't. You know, we get saved, we come into the church, we're excited, we find people that mentor us or that we look up to, we find friends, wow, this is so cool, they're Christians. And then somewhere along the way, we find out they're human, and we're crushed. Why, if I knew they were human, the problem is they're as human as I am. And we can then become critical. The problem is, once we become scornful, we can find fault with anything. If we get into that mode, everywhere we look, we can see something wrong. And sometimes when somebody gets like that, through bitterness, through anger, through unforgiveness, through one thing or another, they become a scorner. And they're the kind of person that always finds fault. Truth resides with me. And I understand better than anyone else what really should be going on around here. You can't reason with that kind of person. So say goodbye to him. Get rid of the scorner, the critical spirit, because that person is contagious. And that critical spirit will spread to others, even if it's unspoken. He that loveth pureness of heart... Now, somebody who just loves pureness, somebody who wants to walk in the light, someone who wants to be transparent, they want to be honest, no guile, somebody who loves pureness of heart for the grace of his lips, because if he is that way, he's going to be gracious. He that loveth pureness of heart for the grace of his lips, the king shall be his friend. Those in authority appreciate someone who's transparent and they're honest. The eyes of the Lord preserve knowledge, and he overthroweth the words of the transgressor. The Lord is the one who will make sure that truth is vindicated and that error and falsehood is dealt with. The slothful man, I like this, we're back to the lazy man, saith, there's a lion without, I shall be slain in the streets. Boss, I really wanted to come to work today, but there's a lion out there. I got up early and I made my pot of coffee, but I watched the news and there's a lion out there and I can't come to work because I might get eaten, I might get chewed on. There's not a lion in the streets. A lion's out in the wilderness somewhere. He's not hanging out in Jerusalem sitting on the corner with a yarmulke on and, you know, there's no lion in the streets. He's out in the wilderness. But the lazy man, the slothful man, says, I better not go out today. I'd love to go to work, but, you know, there's a lion out there. You know, can't go out. It might rain. Might get a chill. Might catch a cold. Somebody with SARS might sneeze on me. We could spend some time there. The mouth of strange women is a deep pit. That sounds like a big mouth, doesn't it? The mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit. She got a big mouth, this gal. And that's a foreign woman, and it's usually speaking of a harlot. The mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit, and he that is abhorred of the Lord shall fall therein. The person who is out of God's favor for one reason or another, living in rebellion, God does not play the role for that person of a protector, and the person will fall. And there are times, by the way, where God sometimes will bind us over to the thing that we refuse to let go of. You know, the Holy Spirit will come to us and say, you need to let go of this. It does to me, and I know he does to you. And it's at that point where we can say, okay, Lord, forgive me. Or we can say, Lord, don't worry about me. I can handle this. I'm playing with fire, but I won't get burnt. A lot of weak Christians out there, and if they were in this situation, they'd probably fall. But you know me, Lord. You can rest. And I'm sure that's what the Lord's doing. I'm relieved. And little by little, we harden our hearts against the conviction of the Holy Spirit. And then sometimes when we are refusing, God will finally, in the book of Ezekiel, it says, God said to the nation of Israel, you want idols? I will take you to the land of idols. You want to worship idols? Pack your bags. I'm carrying you to Babylon. And by the time you get out of there, you will not have a problem with idols anymore. And there are times, it says, where God binds someone over, as it were, to their adulterous affair. And sometimes a Christian, sometimes a believer who will not yield to the Lord, will not yield to his word, to his spirit, continues in rebellion. There's a point in time where God says, okay, and he binds us over to the situation. And it's ruinous. And it's painful. But it's also breaking. And then when there's brokenness, a broken and a contrite spirit, you know, the Lord will not despise. So, the mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit. He that is abhorred of the Lord shall fall therein. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. Guess what? That's why they laugh 400 times a day when they're in preschool. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. You have little kids. Have you ever noticed that? Foolishness, it's just bound in their hearts. They're crazy. They're just little sinners that love to have fun. Then, you know, David says, I was born in sin, conceived in iniquity. So your little kids, foolishness is bound in their heart. I mean, how many times you have a kid in a high chair who gets a mouthful of spinach and goes, and shoots it all over everybody. And everybody goes, oh, that's so cute. And then that's it. That kid's going to do that from then on. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. Kids are crazy. Now, I enjoy them. I enjoy their craziness, especially when it's somebody else's kids. But the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. So the training of the heart of a child. Foolishness is bound in there. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. Now look. There are, I believe, 13 verses about discipline in the book of Proverbs. 12 of them say, beat them. No, not abusive. It's just talking about discipline. Here's the shame. You know, when the laws of the land come in conflict with the instruction of Scripture, the Bible doesn't anywhere teach child abuse. We are never to be abusive with our children. The Bible does say that no child who is in rebellion is injured by getting his rear end paddled. Now, the government today and the legislators, they face a difficult situation because child abuse is rampant in this country. And I don't like child abusers or anybody that would hurt a child. So the government's in a difficult situation where they have to pass legislation, and that means that we have to be wise because you can get caught in the system, and the system has no conscience and is merciless. Again, one of the Calvaries on the West Coast, a dad, kids, foolishness bound in their heart, they're eating in a restaurant, the kids are going crazy, disrupting the whole restaurant, the dad finally takes the kid, goes out in the car, paddles the kid's rear end, kid settles down, drives it far from him, brings him back in, finish their dinner. When they leave, the restaurant owner writes down the license plate on the car. 2 days later, human services show up at the house and take the kids away. And it takes 4 months to get their kids back. So use wisdom. You never discipline your kids out in public. They know that. They'll take advantage of you. You know, my kids, when they were little, are, don't hit me, and everybody in the mall looking at us, you know. When we get home, you're going to get it. No, don't beat me. But discipline is as important as instruction. And you know, you have little kids. I mean, you have one of mine, when they were so little that they were too little to paddle the rear end, you would smack their hand and say no. And they would look at us and put their hand back out again. You think, oh, no, Lord, what are we in for? And we were in for it. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. He that oppresseth the poor to increase riches, and he that gives to the rich shall surely come to want. God will not bless if you mess with the poor. He has a particular place in his heart for the poor. If you oppress the poor to increase riches, you're in trouble. And if you give money to the wealthy to buy favor and all that, that's another waste of money, you'll come to want. Now, verses 17 to 21, they introduce us now to a section of the book of Proverbs. There were not the chapter breaks when Solomon wrote these down and when they were collected. So there was a break here at verse 17, and it takes us through a series of sayings, 30 different sayings, and runs us to the end of chapter 24 at verse 22. And we enter into 30 sayings now of things, and this section from 17 to 21 is an introductory portion to that. It's an introduction. And at verse 22, we have the first saying. So let's read this together. And look, the interesting thing is, if you read it, it is speaking right to us. And you can hear the heart of the Lord here. Bow down thine ear and hear the words of the wise. To bow down the ear is to listen, to yield. And apply thine heart unto my knowledge. For it is a pleasant thing if thou keep them within thee. They shall withal be fitted in thy lips. If you bow down your ear, if you listen to knowledge and to wisdom, it is a pleasant thing. They'll become part of your very vocabulary, the vocabulary of your life. That thy trust may be in the Lord. I have made known to thee this day, even to thee, have not I written to thee excellent things in counsels and knowledge? I mean, I'll tell you that it floors me to sit here and read that. The Lord to be saying right to us this evening, have not I written to thee? And God looks down at us and says, I have written my word to thee. Singular, as individuals. Have not I written to thee? Know the certainty of the words of truth, that thou mightest answer the words of truth. To them that send thee. So, have not I written to thee excellent things, counsel of knowledge, that I might make thee know the certainty of the words of truth. These things that I'm giving to you are true. That you might answer the words of truth to those to whom you're sent. So that you'll have truth then to dispense to others. And here now is this series of sayings that we enter into. Rob not the poor because he is poor. Don't take advantage of someone who's downtrodden. Neither oppress the afflicted in the gate. Now, they're not afflicted in the gate. The gate of the city, and those of you who've been on the trips to Israel with us know this. The gate of the city was there's usually an inner and an outer gate. There are big arches. The gate of the city had stone seats, usually built in along the edges of it somewhere. And it was a cool place in the city, in that part of the world where it's hot at midday. and where the elders and those who ruled the city would come is to the gate, and they would sit there, and that's where they would try cases, that's where they would make their decisions about policy and interpret the law of God. You know, when Jesus says the gates of hell shall not prevail against the church, that doesn't mean the church is breaking down the gates of hell, it doesn't mean the gates are chasing us down the street. It's the stratagems of hell. The gates of hell will not prevail against my church, he says. And here it says, rob not the poor because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate. That politically, there shouldn't be decisions being made that oppress the afflicted. And of course, I'm afraid in human politics, there is always error. We should always pray for those in authority. For the Lord, here's why, for the Lord will plead their cause, the poor and the afflicted, and spoil the soul of those that spoiled them. So, sobering to be taken to heart for those that are making decisions in regards to civil law, different things. Make no friendship with an angry man. And that just makes sense. If somebody said to you, don't buy a mean dog, you'd understand. Who would do that? Isn't it interesting? The Lord has to tell us to make no friendship with an angry man. And with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare unto thy soul. You get involved with someone like that, hang around, you watch their manner of doing things, and it starts to become infectious, and you end up in trouble. Be not thou one of them that strike hands, or of them that are sureties for debt. Now, the striking hand in those days when you made a deal. You know, 50 years ago, millions of dollars were traded on Wall Street on a handshake. Today, you need a contract to get married. But then they just struck hands, and that was a deal. So be not of them that strike hands, of them that become surety and end up in debt all the time. If thou hast nothing to pay, you know, why should they take away your bed from under you? That's a good rule for a credit card, too, you know. You don't have anything to pay. Don't work yourself into debt. Why should they take away your bed? Remove not the ancient landmark which thy fathers have set. Now, interesting proverb, and it has lots of meanings, and certainly by the time Hosea says in chapter 5, don't remove the ancient bound, that the rulers were doing that. The ancient landmarks in Israel were set to mark the boundaries between Naphtali and Issachar and the different tribes. The land was divided unto the tribes, and then within the tribes the land was divided unto the families. And that land, the Lord says, is not yours. You're leasing it from me. You pay the tithe, you give me a tenth of the increase. Every 7 years you let it rest. It's my land. And the boundaries then that were set for the families were to be passed to the next generation. It wasn't to be sold to foreigners, to Ammonites or Hittites, or that land belonged to the Lord. And those ancient boundaries were usually just piles of stone. They were landmarks. And God said, don't remove them. They've been established of me. Now, of course, in society, we've removed many of the ancient landmarks. The absolutes that this nation was built on. Certain things used to be absolutely right and absolutely wrong. We've removed them. And in the spiritual sense, it's also destructive. Little story that they like to tell you when you go to Israel, because when you tour the land of Israel today, you can see sometime in the field a pile of rocks. And that's a landmark between the field of one farmer and the field of another, their family land. And they've been there for millennium. It's a pile of rocks. They don't have all of the legal records the way we do today in some places. Solomon says, don't remove the ancient law. If they were ancient in his day, how old were they? The story goes that there were two brothers, and that the beginning of Jerusalem took place this way, that there were two brothers, and the one brother was married and had lots of children, and the other brother never married, and they lived next to each other, and there was a pile of rocks that was a landmark between their properties. And the one brother with no wife, no children, who loved his other brother, thought, you know, I don't have the responsibility. He's got so much responsibility. He's got those kids. He's got a wife. I don't know what I can give to him. So I'm going to go out at night when he's asleep, and I'm going to move that pile of rocks towards my house, and I'm going to broaden his land. So he'll have a greater inheritance, and when he gives it to his kids, he'll have more there for his family. The other brother, it said, sat and talked with his wife and said, you know, I feel so far sorry for my brother. You know, we've got each other. We've got the kids. He doesn't have anything. And I don't know what to do. I can't hook him up. I'm not Cupid. So you know what? I think I'm going to go out at night. I'm going to move that pile of rocks towards our house, and I'm going to broaden his land. And at least then he'll have more of an inheritance. So as the story goes, of course, at one night, one brother goes out and he takes the pile of rocks and he moves it towards his house. The next night, a few nights later, the other brother goes out and he moves the pile of rocks back towards his house. And this goes on for a while, and the pile of rocks never, it ends up in the same place all the time. And finally, one night, they run into each other there. And the one brother says, you know, I have to confess that I've been sneaking out here at night to take this pile of rocks and move it towards my house, just wanting to bless you and give to you, and I love you, and I know you got the kids and the responsibility. The other brother saying, you know, I was doing the same thing. We decided you're not married, you don't have kids, and we just wanted to bless you, and we were, and of course these brothers fell into each other's arm, and that boundary was set. Jerusalem, the city of peace, which of course is still to live up to the name of that pile of rocks. But it's one of the stories they tell you when you tour the land. So remove not the ancient landmarks. Raised in a Christian home, raised by Christian parents, there are certain things by those parents who love you that have been built into your lives. They are landmarks. Don't remove them. They've stood the test of time, of decades and a millennium. And they were true in Solomon's day. They're true now. Seest thou a man diligent in his business? He shall stand before kings. He shall not stand before mean or obscure men. Diligent in business, God will bless. When thou sittest to eat with a ruler. Now, you're really worried about your waistline if you sit down to eat with a ruler. Come on, we're working our way through Proverbs here. This is a king, a prince, a person in authority, okay? When thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee, and put a knife to your throat if you're a man given to appetite. Now, see, that's why I don't eat with rulers, because I don't want to have to worry about that. Be not desirous of his dainties. His hors d'oeuvres, is, you know, for they are deceitful food. Now, that, I guess, can be in more than one way. You know, hors d'oeuvres are deceitful. Just seems no matter how many you eat, you never get full. And then they put those out, so you eat a lot of those. That way you don't do much damage to the main course when that comes. But I think this is in the context of being wined and dined. That's what we call it today. You know, senators and congressmen and people taking out each other and putting food in front of them. You know, look out. There's something, another motive going on there when you're getting wined and dined. And if you're the kind of person, and they know that you're, you know, you got the appetite, and they take you out there and stick a big pile of lobster tail and a big tub of butter in front of you, hey, put a knife to your throat. You know, you're working your way to an early grave there. So, that's applicable to some of us it's not, so let's move on. It's a saying, we're in these sayings. Verse 4 says, labor not to be rich. What am I laboring for then? Look, it tells us about the diligent man here that'll stand before you. It's said to us here that God blesses the wise. But it's telling us not to spend our lives seeking wealth. That's not to be the labor of our life. Labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. That's not what human life is about. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? And it was an interesting play in this verse on the language. Wilt thou let your eyes fly, literally, upon that which is not? For riches certainly take themselves wings and fly away as an eagle toward heaven. So, you know, don't let your eyes immediately fly towards wealth. I want that. I want that. I want this. Because it's temporary. It's going to burn. It's gone in no time. And it will take wings of itself and fly away. Verse 6, eat thou not the bread, neither desire, eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye. I'm thinking of Marty Feldman or somebody here. Eat thou not bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. Now, come on. Now, what it's saying is the person that has an evil eye is the person that's a miser or the person that's stingy. So we were in the house of the rich man eating up in verse 1. And it says, be careful when you're there in the house of a ruler or a king, but, you know, his diet's the cholesterol's too high, and, you know, there's, you don't know whether he's whining or dying. So be careful when you're eating, you know, with a wealthy ruler. Now it says, be careful when you're eating in the house of a stingy person. So you want to find houses that are in between, evidently, those two places. Eat thou not bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire his dainty foods. Here's going to tell us why. For as he thinketh in his heart, he's stingy, so is he. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. Yeah, go on, you want seconds? Great. You pig, I can't believe you're eating. No, you know, as he in his heart, he's, I can't, you know, you think I got kids to feed. I can't believe you're taking seconds. Next time you come over, we're having rice, white rice, big piles of it. That's all you're going to get here, you know. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. And the morsel which thou hast eaten, you've eaten a morsel and he's stingy. The morsel which thou hast eaten shalt thou vomit up and lose thy sweet word. You know, I thought it was a blessing. I thought I was in fellowship. You know, this guy, so stingy, I'd like to give him his dinner back. There's only one way for that to happen. But, you know, if I could give it back to him, let him give it back to him. You know, the morsel which thou hast eaten, they'll vomit up, and your sweet words will be gone. I'd love to give it back. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. Can't reason with someone who's proud. They're too proud to receive, so don't bother. Don't put on the gloves. Don't get in the ring. If you have the Lord's leading, be a bystander, not a participant. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. Here it is again. Remove not the old landmark and enter not into the fields of the fatherless. Because sometimes those that were poor, that were the one thing they did have is the inheritance of their land. So remove not the old landmark, enter not into the fields of the fatherless. Here's why. Because there, the fatherless, the poor, their redeemer, their goel, but here it's talking about the Lord playing the role of the kinsman redeemer. Their Redeemer is mighty. He shall plead their cause with thee. So don't mess with the fatherless, the orphan, with the poor. The Lord is the one who will take up on their behalf, and he is mighty. Apply thine heart to instruction and thine ears to the words of knowledge. Understand how God feels about that situation. Verse 13, another saying, withhold not correction from the child. For if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. You know the verse that says, spare the rod and spoil the child. Chuck Smith said one of his grandsons thought that was a commandment. And his dad went to give him a spank, and he said, you can't do that. And he said, why? And he said, well, the word says, spare the rod and spoil the child. He said, that's not a commandment, that's a warning. Get over here. So again, withhold not correction from the child. If you beat him with the rod, he won't die. Doesn't say beat him with the tongue. Doesn't say beat him with your fist or your foot. A rod. Nothing wrong with paddling the rear end. Never hit a kid in the face. That is godless. Again, God has put a slab of meat in the appropriate place for paddling. And it's not the nose, and it's not the eyebrow, and it's not the jaw. And any of you have been treated that way, understand. Walk softly, carry a little stick. Because your kids know how to read you, you know. Lots of times, you know, I'll see a parent, you stop that, you're going to get it. Now, what that means is, mom's warming up. That's what it means. Then 5 minutes later, what did I tell you? You do that again, you're going to get it. Okay, she's like medium to high now. You know, 5 minutes later, that's it. That's it. You're going to get it. Okay, that means that doesn't mean we're going to get it right now. We may be able to push this one more time. You know, that's what it says is that's not the way to do it. Withhold not correction. You just say, come over here, honey. You know, because if you threaten and you scream and you give all the warning signs, they play the game. If you are faithful and diligent in that, then they have to be on their toes, don't they? And they have to learn. Withhold not correction from a child. And look, there are other ways to discipline a child than paddling. Again, when we do that, it should never be in fury. It should never be in anger. It should never be because they're crazy. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. You don't beat a kid because they're nuts. You'd never stop beating them. Again, discipline is relative to disobedience. Because kids will do things that you don't make rules for. They'll put beans up their nose. You think that's funny? I could probably have somebody raise their hand here. There you go. You know, my wife, when she was little, you know those things that grow in the weeping willow tree, those little fuzzy things. Her and her sister stuffed a bunch of those up there. Well, you don't beat a kid for doing that, because not unless you have a weeping willow rule. You know, the next time you put those fuzzy things up your nose and we have to go to the emergency ward, you're going to get spanked when we get home. Now you have a rule. Then it's disobedience. Before that, it's just insanity. So disobedience is the reason for instruction, correction. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. Because, you know, isn't it interesting? You know, Dr. Spock, again, recanted on their, you know, early that, you know, spank your child and you create a violent citizen. And, you know, and years later, Dr. Spock said, you know, it's the sociologist and the psychologist and the child psychologist and the doctor and the author like me that has ruined a generation, realizing, you know, you're going to, you never beat them with your tongue, because you can say one thing that will crush the life of a child, their spirit. You're not going to destroy their life by paddling the rear end. Particularly if you do that the right way. You sit with them afterwards. You talk with them. Are you mad? Okay, well, let's sit here until you're not mad. Let's talk about why this happened. Let's go through the process. Let's pray. Let's understand what we need to learn. But you can say one thing with your mouth that will just crush them. And that's wrong. Because that kid's going to, you know, the will is made of iron. And that's what we need to, if you don't curb that will, the police are going to curb that will someday. You let that kid get away with murder in the name of psychology or something else. What happens if they get drafted or go to the military? You think that drill instructor is going to be a nice guy? Life is going to demand obedience. There is order. There's government. There's laws. And if we teach them from the time they're little to yield, to bend, to obey. Save them. That's as far as we're going to get this evening. Great place to end. Thou shalt beat him with a rod and save his soul from hell. I don't know what Pastor Joe's teaching my mom, but the last thing he said stuck with her all week. Well, maybe we should become Buddhist, Mom. Do you ever think of that? And you could just, we could meditate about these things instead of getting whacked all the time now. Read ahead. We're working our way through this. We're going to come to drunkenness here, and then some great stuff as we're moving ahead here. I can't wait till we get to the ant and the coney and the virtuous woman. Some great stuff ahead of us. So I feel sorry for the guys at the tape library because I never end up where I say I'm going to end up. It's hard to plan this out, but next week we will pick back up in here in verse 15 in chapter 23. So read on through the next few chapters. Let's have the musicians come.